This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's episode 9. I actually forgot last week to say what episode it was. Not that anyone was paying attention to that, but, you know, it's part of the format. I'm supposed to do it, and I didn't. So this is episode 9. Last week's episode, obviously, was episode 8. Anyways, it's Thursday today. It's been a great week, as usual. Not because of anything I do, but because God is just good and kind. So I am in partnership with him. So we're going to actually talk about things that I do and that sort of thing. So I shouldn't say it's not anything that I do. I do have a part in this. And thankfully, he has allowed me to have a part in this. Anyways, this week, topics for discussion have been centering on free will. We'll just jump straight into it. There's a couple of different things bound up in these topics for discussion. The first of all is you can't really have free will before you have consciousness. And so we've been talking about the wonders of consciousness. I was telling my buddies this week as we got together and we talked about the things of the Lord. I said, consciousness is something that's always been fascinating to me. I remember when I was 10, 11, 12, 9, sometime in there, I can remember sitting and staring at things and thinking, I'm looking out my eyes right now. And I'm thinking about looking out my eyes right now. This isn't a movie. It's not a recording. I'm actually doing this right now. And while I'm doing this, I'm thinking about other things as well as thinking about looking out my eyes right now. And other people are doing this same thing. This is so weird. One of my buddies, when I was going through this little rehearsal with him this week, he looked at me, he said, "You had a really interesting childhood, didn't you?" And I said, "You know, I did. I was just fascinated by things when I was a kid. You know, this thing that we have that we're aware of ourselves. And we just, like, look out our eyes, and it's so weird." But beyond all that, beyond that capability that we have to actually comprehend that we exist, is we have an ability to choose. We call it free will. And, you know, we could get into a big debate about, you know, what is free will versus the omniscience of God and foreknowledge and yada, 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 yada. And I'm not going to tell you that I've got all the answers to all of that stuff. What I do know is that it looks like, from all the appearances that I can see on this side of it, that in fact we have the ability to choose. And God has given us that ability to choose. And it's really an amazing thing, because when you think about it, God has created beings that are aware of their own existence and can actually look up at him and go, I don't think you exist. I mean, how bizarre is that? I think, just as a side road, that very thing that God has made beings aware of their own existence that can decide that they don't believe in his existence, that very thing, I think, tells us a lot about parenting. Because one of the traps that we fall into as parents is we really would like our kids just to be little robots. You know, it's like, yes, go there, pick that up, wash the dishes, take off your clothes and put other clothes on. You're not going out like that, are you? What's the matter with you? You're not doing what I'm saying. Make me proud. Do the things I never did in my life. You know, yada, 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 yada. If we're not careful, we fall into this mode of just rambling off at the mouths and just expecting our kids to be little automatons. Automatons. That's it, automatons. Anyways, sorry, little brain glitch there. And we really expect our kids just to do everything, because then that makes us feel like we're a good parent. My kid's doing what I told them to do. But see, the process of parenting, I think, should more closely mimic what God has actually done with us as his children. He's given us free will. He respects our free will. We make bad decisions. You know, he says, you know, that was not such a good decision. I mean, he does guide us and help us. And I certainly think there is a whole progression as you are raising children that in the beginning you are, you know, more autocratic, where you just say, this is what we're doing and we're doing it, because they can't really understand the whys and the hows and all that kind of thing. But as children grow, and as they specifically get more knowledgeable and get more aware of themselves, I think what's really important as parents is to become advisors, is to become trusted advisors, to where you say, they can tell just from the relationship that you have with them that you are someone they can trust and you are someone that they can believe will guide them to environments of success. They need to see that your own lives are successful, and they need to see that you can guide them into success. And, you know, if they just don't hop and jump and run just like you want them to run at first mark, maybe it's because you don't have a deep enough relationship with them to where they trust you, or maybe it's because you haven't approached it in a way that doesn't ping their flesh. Which is another discussion that we need to have at some point, but we'll have that discussion. Suffice it to say, when we look at God and what God has done with us as human beings, what we find is that God's style of parenting is that he gives us free will, and I think he enjoys our exercise of that free will, no matter what decisions we're making, because I think it's like our bodies. You know, he made our bodies, and our bodies are cool. I mean, when you understand just a smidgen of all the wonderful, cool things that are going on in your body every day, and of course God does, I think he looks at our bodies, no matter really what we're doing with them, and he goes, okay, that's like really cool. And I think as well, he looks at our free will, and he says, wow, look at that. Look at that. They're choosing. They're autonomous. They're choosing. And of course, nothing delights him more than when we choose him and when we choose paths of success instead of paths of failure. Now then, if free will, you know, is this wonderful gift that God has given us, and it gives us the ability to choose paths of success over paths of failure, then we could very well expect that one of the things that the flesh is going to do is the flesh is going to diminish the effect of that ability to choose a path of success. Because if the flesh can diminish what we believe is our capacity to choose, then we certainly won't be choosing environments of success. And that, in and of itself, puts us closer to an environment of failure. Now, the flesh does this in a variety of ways. It runs the whole gamut, and it will take whatever way it possibly can get us to stop. I mean, it has all kinds of things at its disposal, and it's going to try everyone along the way. And if something doesn't work, it's going to try something else. And if you hear yourself doing some of these things that I'm going to talk about here in just a few minutes, you can just pretty much count on the fact that you can say, that's flesh, and I should stop doing that. So what's the gamut? Well, let's start all the way over at the left side of the gamut. All the way over at the left side of the gamut is, well, I can't. I just can't do that. Can't. I don't have the capability. I can't do that. I have this thing that I did last year called Good Eats in Eden. And the basic idea is, look, take 10 days and only eat the things that would be available to you if you were walking through the Garden of Eden and picking things off trees or digging them out of the dirt. So it's basically fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, raw nuts. That's it. Nothing cooked, nothing boxed, nothing bottled, except for water, because you get up water. Okay, so anyways. Good Eats in Eden. After I did this, lost some weight, you know, and then another buddy of mine did it for a while. He was losing some weight. So there were some people that found out about it. So they wrote me. So, well, what is this? How does this work? You know, so, because they were interested in trying it. So I talked to one of the people and I said, well, went through the whole thing. First reaction out of her mouth was, no meat? I said, no, not for 10. Oh, I can't do that. It's over. Click. Done. Ding. Okay. There it is. Can't do it. Not going to do it. Click. So that's one way. Can't. Okay, well, if you ever hear yourself, well, I just can't. Okay, then you just need to back up a step and say, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. I have free will. I can choose to do anything. Some things are not the smartest thing in the world to do, but I can choose. Okay, so don't let that one. The other thing is, well, I can't. I'm just born this way. I'm born this way. I mean, it's a variation of I can't, but it sounds better. You know, I have red hair, so I'm bound to get angry. You know, I have homosexual tendencies. I was born this way, and there's nothing I can do. I just born. Well, but that's a denial of free will. And it's wrong, because anybody can be anything, because he gave us free will. And it is the most marvelous gift that we have. The other one that I get tickled with is, oh, I forgot. What do you mean you forgot? Oh, I just forgot. I forgot. I didn't do it because I forgot. Okay, well... Wait a minute. You know, several years ago, I kind of made a pact with myself that I was not going to say, I forgot anymore. I was going to say, I chose not to remember. I made a decision that I was not going to take the steps that I could have taken so that I would remember something. Now, I personally, you know, I try to maintain a pretty good system so that I don't forget things. And my system is a little place called Remember the Milk. It's a website that you can subscribe to, and with Remember the Milk, you can schedule reminders for things and have a bunch of different lists, blah, 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 blah. I also have a thing called Jot.com, J-O-T-T.com. And what you can do with Jot.com is you can actually call Jot.com and talk to it. It will transcribe out what you say and send you reminders, or it will send it over to Remember the Milk, or, by the way, it will send it to Facebook and anything. It's very cool. So whenever something comes up and I think, oh, I got to remember that, I just pull out my iPhone, bing, 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 pow, you know, I get it logged in a system somewhere. Now, some people will say, well, I don't have an iPhone. I've got a bug. Okay. Okay. But that does not mean that you can't have a system. You know, you can take pieces of paper, stick pieces of paper up places. You know, today I had to deposit some checks for my little internet service provider business. It's the 20th of the month, so I deposit all my checks. And I needed to do it. Actually, it's the 21st today, but the 20th was yesterday when I processed the checks, in case anyone is confused. So I needed to process these checks, got them all into an envelope. When I got into my car, I did not put the envelope in my glove compartment. Because if I put the envelope in my glove compartment, I've done this before, it sits there for days. So that doesn't work out so good. I take the envelope, I put it up on my dash, so as I'm driving along, it's there, I can see the reflection in my windshield, and obviously, if I can keep seeing it, then I'll go do it. And in fact, I got all the way to work today, I was getting out of my car, and I looked down, saw it again, I went, ah, okay. So I get back in my car and go take care of that. Because that helps me decide. Helps me decide. I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, I forgot. Now, the other one that cracks me up is, well, I didn't know. I have a saying for this, too. I have a saying for a lot of things in my life. My saying for I didn't know is, right, knowledge is not a hunter. It does not track you, attack you, throw you to the ground, and force you to absorb it. Knowledge is not a hunter. Of course you didn't know. You have to pursue knowledge. You have to go find out. You have to make the decision. And I will bet you, if you just rock back and think a minute, that when you got stuck in that thing because you didn't know, if you just think about it, there might have been a little voice that would have gone, maybe you should do a little research on that, you know. But what the flesh goes is, ooh, shiny, never mind, you know, because it doesn't want us doing research. It doesn't want us, you know, trying to get other things done. It just wants us to keep trundling along because we think, well, if I don't get it done, I can just say, I don't know, you know. So anyways, the other one is, well, I was going to do it. Okay, you don't really get points for I was going to do it, because that really does not get it done. It's kind of like the other one where, well, I was thinking about it. Yeah, well, you know, you can think about it all day long, But unless you do it, it ain't done. I had a little saying several years ago, thinking about it is not a substitute for action. Gonna do it is not a substitute for action. Feeling guilty about doing it is not a substitute for action. Excuses are not a substitute for action. The only substitute for action is action. Exercise your free will. If there's something that's coming along and you know, yeah, I really need to do that, just do it. Do it and do it and do it. Now, it's interesting because the flesh not only seeks to remove free will from us, seeks to convince us that we don't have the capability to do certain things, or, you know, or it helps us to forget to do certain things, it also can move us towards believing that other people don't have free will. And this actually is kind of an upside-down way that it approaches this. This came about because I was listening to a famous politician's wife talking about the fact that when her husband was discovered in an affair, that she just absolutely could not believe it. Because she said, there was no way I could imagine that he would ever do that. And it completely destroyed my life. And it will never be the same again. Because, you know, I just never imagined that he was capable of doing that. And I thought at the time, well, I mean, really, what you're doing is you're denying his free will. Because all of us, at any time, are more than capable of making bad decisions. And in fact, we can end up starting to make a bad decision that kind of inches us forward into another bad decision that inches us forward into another bad decision. Many years ago, I had a close friend who made a series of bad decisions. And I'm not going to go into details with it, but suffice it to say, you know, once he got done looking back on it, he thought, what in the world was I thinking? You know, because it almost destroyed the most precious relationship that he had in his life. And I talked to him about it. But the fact that he made those decisions did not shock me. It did not stun me. I did not think less of him as a person, because I knew he has free will. It doesn't matter what all decisions he's made before. At any given time, he has every capability of making a bad decision, because that's his free will. Now, I certainly believe that if you make enough bad decisions in a row, you can get yourself to a place where making decisions, you're compromised in your ability to make decisions. That can happen. I mean, you see this in people who are addicted to drugs or addicted to alcohol. I mean, they get to the place where they're very much compromised in their ability to make good decisions, and the drugs or the alcohol or the sex or the whatever is just driving them. But the fact remains that at any point, they can make a decision. There is a ministry at a nearby church. It's a recovery ministry, and it's specifically a recovery ministry. Well, not specifically, but many of the people that they deal with are meth addicts. From what I understand, I have never experienced it myself, thank God, but from what I understand, meth is highly, highly addictive. And yet at some point, these who have been addicted make a decision. This is not working for me. This is creating an environment of failure. And out of that decision, then, this recovery ministry helps them make more and more better decisions so that they can get themselves backed out of that. Many years ago, my parents were missionaries to Sri Lanka. And in Sri Lanka, there's a lot of demon worship. And there are firewalkers, and these guys, you know, meditate until the demons infest them, and then they do things like walk across hot coals, or they put these big hooks in their back and they swing them around and they don't feel any pain, and yada yada yada. One of these men who used to engage in all this gave his heart to the Lord, and a subsequent conversation with my dad was talking about this very thing, was talking about free will. And he said, you know, he said, even when we would meditate so that Satan would come into my life, and I'd meditate and meditate, and Satan would fill me, he said, there was never a time when I couldn't say no. I'd get to the place where I'd say no, and Satan would leave. Now, that kind of goes contrary to what, you know, we in the Assemblies of God circles think about in terms of demon possessions. But I think it's not that demon-possessed people can't say no, it's that they won't say no. That they're so filled with fear, they're so filled with this, that, and the other, that they're bound up in such a way that they don't say, you know, that they can't say go. And so in that case, there are situations where some outside intervention is needed and some help comes along. Sometimes the flesh, I'm getting my mail, sometimes the flesh, you know, kind of works so hard to get us to deny our free will that it actually kind of backfires on it. I have a buddy who happens to be doing the Good Eats in Eden thing at this point. And he was supposed to start it like on a Saturday morning. His wife and his kids were gone for the week. And so he decided, okay, I'm starting it. I'm doing it, you know. And we had a lot of conversations about, you know, what's legal, what's not legal. I finally got across the concept of no man. Like, okay, nothing processed, none of that junk. You're walking through the Garden of Eden. What can you pick off the trees, dig out of the dirt, and eat? That's it. That's what you eat. You know, 10 days. So he got that all straight. Okay. But he told me earlier this week, he said, man, he said, I'm telling you, he said, the flesh fought me all weekend. It just fought me all weekend on this. I'm backing up. And he said, it just got to the place where it was ridiculous. All the stuff the flesh was throwing at me. He said, it even got to the place where I was going out to do some fishing with a buddy, he said, on Monday. And, you know, my buddy had told me, listen, why don't you just bring your own lunch and I'll bring my own lunch. And, you know, that way we can just have what we want. And my flesh was telling me, oh, well, yeah, you know, so what, are you just going to bring fruits and vegetables? You know, because, you know, then to your buddy, you're going to have to say, well, I'm just here eating fruits and vegetables, you know, and what's that going to do? You know, how's your buddy going to feel about that if you just bring fruits and vegetables? And he's just ragging on it. And so he decides, okay, what I'm going to do is I'll just wait to start till Tuesday. So then he gets there on Monday, and they're in the boat. They're going fishing, and then his buddy turns to him and says, Chris, he says, hope you don't mind, but all I brought was fruits and vegetables. Because this isn't the funny part. He had had a heart attack, and so he was eating better. But the funny part is that after Chris's flesh wailed on him and wailed on him and wailed on him about, well, how's your buddy going to feel if you just... You know, Chris is sitting there and his buddy is telling him, well, yeah, all I brought was fruits and vegetables. So it would have been perfectly fine for him to bring fruits and vegetables. And in fact, part of that and part of this whole battle that my buddy experienced through the whole weekend, he got to the place where Monday night, I think it was Monday night, he said he was sitting on his couch and he was just battling it. And he finally decided, okay, this is stupid. I'm tired of this. You know, and he said he got up, he made the decision, he went into the kitchen and started cutting up fruit. You know, because he realized, because he had an understanding of the struggle that was going on between his flesh and his spirit, he understood that that thing that was pushing against him to keep him from making that decision, that was not going to put him on a path of success. And out of that, he said, that's it. We're doing this. And so if you are going through your life and there are things like you feel like you should do, things you know you should do, or if you ever feel yourself claiming that you can't do something or it's out of your control or there's nothing you can do or any of those kind of things, just take a beat, step back. Say, wait a minute. Because those are all characteristics of something that's being spawned by the flesh. And you should just take a breath and say, okay, what decision can I make? I mean, it's that old saying that I have when people are going and they're complaining about this and complaining about that and going on. At some point I'll say, okay, that's fine. Have a little saying. What specific course of action are you proposing? Because if you're not looking to act, if you're just looking to spin in a circle, you will not create an environment of success for yourself. Environments of success. Sometimes I have a hard time saying that word. Environments of sex. No, that's not what we mean. Environments of success are always built out of action. Act. Enjoy today. Make it now. I hope you have a great weekend. This is Phil Ferrand, and I've made it home.